Welcome to Section D, Monocle's weekly design show with me, Hugo MacDonald. In light of the recent announcement that Cape Town will hold the title of World Design Capital 2014, this week we're taking a look at what the Design Capital title really means. Ahead in the show, we hop over to Helsinki, which holds the Design Capital title next year in 2012, to see how the city is getting ready.
I would say that Helsinki and Finland will have a very good future as a design city, as a city of culture.
That was Helsinki Mayor Jussi Pajunen. Also on the show, we sit down with Sao Paulo architect and designer Issei Weinfeld, who talks us through the charm and chaos of his city's built environment.
The city is a kind of mother of all architecture.
In Berlin's Tempelhof Airport, we take a tour around Kubik, a new model for a design fair, which might just be a game changer.
Other fairs, like especially like Cologne, we think it's too old school, and we can think that there is a good possibility for the market to go and think in other ways.
Also on the show, we hear what's hot and what's not in design retail around the world. We quiz various design luminaries on which city they would crown World Design Capital. And we talk type and tableware with the magazine's guest stars, Richard Spencer Powell and Poppy Shibamoto. All that and more on Section D. But first, the design news with Katie Bilboa.
The International Council of Societies of Industrial Design announced in Taipei last Wednesday that Cape Town will hold the World Design Capital title in 2014. After Turin, Seoul and Helsinki next year, Cape Town will be the fourth city to hold the title. More coming up on this topic later in the show. British industrial designer James Dyson has lost a case against a Chinese-owned manufacturer, Vax, who he claims have copied Dyson's DC02 model. Dyson recently brought a similar case against a French manufacturer, but the battle against Vax has caused ripples of outrage across the UK manufacturing scene. Dyson summed up the mood saying, "We've invested decades, not to mention millions, in creating better technology. And sadly, we waste millions more in cases like this. We need to better protect British design." As Dutch Design Week came to a close on Sunday, the winner of the Public Dutch Design Award was announced as the Black Pearl House by Studio Rolf in collaboration with Zek Architekken. The renovation project saw a rundown 100-year-old building be transformed into a spectacular example of contemporary housing. Next year's Pritzker Prize, the most prestigious architecture prize on the circuit, will take place in Beijing, the first time the ceremony would have happened in China. The event will take place on the 25th of May 2012. Thomas J. Pritzker, chairman of the prize, said, "It's particularly appropriate we should go to China. So many of the laureates have projects there, either in progress or completed, including one of our first laureates, I.M. Pei, who won the prize in 1983. Anyone looking for a particularly conceptual hotel experience in the French capital, Paris, might want to head to the Hotel La Maison des Champs-Élysées. With interiors designed by the high-concept fashion house Maison Martine Margiela, the hotel features a lot of white, a lot of Trompe l'Oeil murals, alongside playful riffs on the original 19th-century details of the building."
Welcome back to Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. 2012 sees the Finnish capital, Helsinki, take up the mantle of World Design Capital. After Turin in 2008 and Seoul in 2010, Helsinki might seem like an obvious choice. After all, it's a city that has a long history of design at its heart, and it wears its design principles today on its sleeve. I travelled to Helsinki to find out how it's shaping up. First stop was Mayor Jussi Pajunen's office, overlooking the main harbour. After a fresh lingonberry juice, he slid back his 1960s James Bond-style automatic door, and we got down to business.
Maybe if we just start by you explaining exactly what the World Design Capital is. You get awarded it for a whole year, and you have a year to prepare, is that right?
People ask what it is. In a way, it is not an event or chain of events, but it is a process. It is a process where we try to create we call it a snowball effect.
I mean, I've seen first Turin and then Seoul, and it certainly seems that you've done a very good job at getting the word out there, spreading the message. and talking about the fact that next year is this huge year for the city. But you mentioned it's about more than just events. So, I mean, what are the specific things that you have planned? And what are your hopes that will sort of generate going forward from next year?
For me, the number one thing for the city is to think about the future of the welfare services. It's a very great chance to think about, is there a new design for the services in order to make it better quality and perhaps even with less resources? And that is a learning experience for the city, being the third one. Torino started it, Seoul was a good example of a World Design Capital Year. And we want to be totally different, something which comes from the Finnish way of doing. And the best things about the Finnish society, as you mentioned, is we have a good, very, very well educated people. We feel that we organize everything well. Mm-hmm. And to get all the people working together with one very large project, that's the essence of the design year. But in any case, it's not just a year. The commitment, for example, for the city of Helsinki is very much long term.
I mean, you'd say just then that it's a concept. On a sort of practical, everyday level, can you give any examples of the way in which sort of that works very well, that you can embed design into society?
The strength of the whole year is that it's not one or two things, it's hundreds and hundreds of different things happening together, but under the same framework. And this means when we talk about the budget of the year, we promised to exit organization that we have a budget of 15 million euros, 6 million coming from the municipalities, 5 million coming from the state or ministries, and 4 million coming from the private companies. And now it's 16 million because it was the involvement of the private companies was stronger than expected. But this is only to take care of the framework. The actual, when we try to figure out what is the actual budget of the year, it's more than 50 million euros. Combined all the projects that people are doing, and they're doing with their own money. I would say that Helsinki and Finland will have a very good future as a design city, as a city of culture, taking the time frame of next 20 years. And the number one thing to explain that is that we have very talented, extremely well-educated young people coming to work in the design and cultural field. I don't have any statistic, but I have the feeling that compared to the total population, the cultural and design education is strongest in Europe or even in the world.
From Mayor Pajunen's office, it's a short walk around the corner to the World Design Capital headquarters, overlooking Helsinki's landmark Lutheran Cathedral. A year earlier, when I visited Helsinki, the design capital team was just four, working remotely. Today, it's a bustling, efficient office of over 20. Team director, Pekka Timonen, sat down with me in the boardroom, fittingly underneath a plaque from Monocle, awarding Helsinki the most livable city in our recent Livable Cities Index.
So basically this kind of a movement of world design capitals is funny because, for example, these people from Cape Town, they contacted us. Mm. And of course, we haven't yet started. We asked them the same questions. It's kind of, you know, what is this thing? And now when you have to, like, you realize that you have to, now it's serial, so we have to, have to find out how to do this. But it's very interesting, the Cape Town, for example, the Cape Town approach is surprisingly familiar to us. The same thoughts and the same kind of a spirit is there than we had and we have. So it's for me, that was a positive sign.
Something that I've been quite impressed by is the high visibility that Helsinki World Design Capital has had this year. And sort of marketing strategy and campaign to announce what you're doing in advance of actually doing it seems to have been quite a sort of key part of it. It's not just for Helsinki, it's for the whole world.
From the very beginning, we realized if you are doing the World Design Capital Project, you just cannot stay at home. It's very difficult to involve people if you just stay at home. So we thought about what kind of methods and ideas we can use to involve different people all over the place. And you also have to be very aware of that you also need kind of a disappointment management. Because you raise a lot of different expectations, you get people involved, and this project has its limitations and we have limited staff. You have to be very careful on how you handle different expectations. But it's better that way. It's better than just saying this is what we do and this is, you know, this is how you're going to do it and this is going to get involved. But more trying to create it as a process, because I strongly believe that the most important thing what we can achieve is kind of a legacy. This is not a 1 year or one project, but more this is like a beginning. That we inspire, host, and encourage different things, and then just try to make sure and hope that the good things will continue and grow and evolve. And that's how I see the process.
I mean, you touch upon it there and about the amazing response that you've had from people with exhibitions and things. Is there an argument for saying that Helsinki is a city that has such an incredible history of design, but also a very sort of contemporary understanding of design, where services, sort of welfare, everything really has design incorporated in it, that being the World Design Capital, maybe you don't really need it?
Some people have said why Helsinki needs World Design Capital, as you just mentioned. Things are not so good as they seem from outside, because we have found out and everybody agrees that we have still a long journey to go. Because even though Finland and Helsinki is a very design intensive and design oriented city and country, the use of design and kind of understanding of design is not still on the level we would like to see it. For example, more broad understanding and use of design, understanding that design can be used everywhere in our society. And design awareness is something what every school kid should have. And we kind of more or less agree on that, but we haven't done that yet. So one of the critiques was, why the World Design Capital works so much with the businesses and public sector? Because they should do this anyway. And I said, exactly, they should do this anyway, but they are not doing it enough. So we're trying to encourage and inspire them to do it. Then the second thing is that even though we can be proud of our design heritage and our design culture, Helsinki is still not yet internationally known enough, I think so. I think we deserve a larger international knowledge of Helsinki as a major design hub. So we still have a lot of work to do.
Do you feel people on the street are familiar with World Design Capital? Is it something that engages everybody across society, or is it still something that you're talking to businesses and people working in city government?
I think we still have work to do in that. I think man of the street, almost everybody in Helsinki knows that next year we are the World Design Capital. And there has been discussions in newspapers and radio, etc., about this. But the other thing is then that we have to work hard to make everybody understand what is World Design Capital and why we do this, why this is important. And it will take all next year to really convince people that this is something what is worth doing.
But if you had a microphone now and you were able to say in a couple of sentences why you're doing it and why it is important to every man on the street in Helsinki, what would you say?
I would say, let's create a better city. Everybody knows that it could be worse, but it should be better. So basically, the goal is quite simple. Just work together to create a better city. And that's something what everybody can agree. You know, we should do it. We that's a goal where we all can share.
Helsinki's tireless ambition to improve itself is precisely why we chose it as our most livable city in the Monocle Livable Cities Index this year. As 2012 approaches, the city is taking a similarly dogged approach to ensure it gets the most out of holding the World Design Capital title. If anyone can prove that holding this title has the power to transform a city, It's sure to be the plucky Finns in Helsinki. For Monocle, I'm Hugo MacDonald. The Design Capital is a young title in quite a crowded playing field of numerous nominal accolades. Does it really mean anything, or is it just an excuse for a few parties and a lot of publicity? I was joined in the studio earlier in the week by Jeremy Myerson, director of the Helen Hamlin Research Centre at the RCA, who was part of the Design Capital 2014 selection committee.
There are a number of criteria which they asked for. The first was that the city would have the expertise and the infrastructure and also the financial capability to mount a year-long programme of design. That was the first criteria. The second one was that the programme itself should be inspiring and leave a legacy. And the third criteria was about the city itself. Did it have a cohesive and compelling narrative to say about how the city had been built or regenerated by design? And the final criterion was really about social and cultural development and economic development. What was the impact of design in the city, and particularly the impact on the citizens of the city? So those were the four criteria. And of course, ICSID, the International Council of Societies for Industrial Design, they solicited entries. And we were choosing, in a series, we were choosing the fourth capital in a series. So there was a lot of interest.
How many cities applied then, do you know?
Well, there was a long list with quite a lot of cities, and they were vetted and visited and discussed by the ICSID executive team. Where we came on board and the selection panel was an interesting mix of city officials, including the mayor of Helsinki, because Helsinki has the ICSID designation in 2012. There was an economist. There was the president of the Industrial Designers group in the States. Myself, I run a research centre at the Royal College of Art, which is looking at quality of life, particularly urban quality of life. So we were a mix of people, and we were given five cities to look at, and each city had to submit, a quite terrifying amount of documentation.
You said that cities are taking it very seriously, but there is also quite a lot of people are quite cynical about whether these designations actually mean anything in concrete terms and have a sort of ongoing benefit for cities going ahead after the year of being the World Design Capital. Do you think that is that fair, or are there long-term benefits to being designated a World Design Capital?
Well, I think that cities all over the world have pre-existing regeneration plans, that they're all looking at economic growth, they're looking at what attracts investment, inward investment to cities. And clearly design in all its different manifestations, infrastructure design, the cultural aspects of design. And South Africa and Cape Town had the most coherent and vibrant theme for their year. They had this theme, which was live, design, transform life. And they went absolutely, root and branch directly for social regeneration. And they were looking at design as a kind of cohesive language that would pull together the different sections of the community and be an economic leveller. And they had some very, very interesting ways in which they were going to do this during the year. Dublin had this this theme of turning design inside out, which was slightly more kind of, metaphysical. It was a debating shop. It was analysing design. There was something slightly introspective about it compared to what Cape Town was trying to achieve. And Bilbao simply had the theme of the design of cities, which was, this is how you regenerate a city, with design. And I think ultimately, and I can't give up too much away about the kind of very long debates we had about it, but I would say that there was a feeling that Bilbao will do it anyway. It is a design city, and maybe it doesn't need the designation in the way that Cape Town does. Dublin, coming from a cultural approach, a cultural infrastructure, and Dublin having this kind of idea of yes, we're a literary city, yes, we're an artistic city, but we're also a design city. I think putting in the bid enable them to bring together their design community. So I think they'll get a lot of benefit out of it in the long run. And maybe they'll bid again in 2016.
And hypothetically speaking, if you were to choose one city for 2016 off the top of your head, which one would you like to see?
Well, I think that Dublin is a very, very interesting city. I think that Istanbul is a very interesting city. I mean, I visited recently and it's incredible that you can walk down a street in the middle of Istanbul. And this is really where East meets West. On one side, there's a kind of, you know, Gucci shop. And on the other side, you look through the window and there are 200 men in string vests drinking coffee, you know, with straw on the floor. And the coexistence of these two worlds and their craft, artisan traditions, I would love to see Istanbul designated as a world design city. So cities do get regenerated. And I think that Torino, as the first city in the designation, ICSID were laying down a marker there. This is about regeneration. But who knows what will happen in the future? I hope they stick with it, and I hope it grows. And the more designations and the more successful programmes, the less cynicism around the whole process.
That was Jeremy Myerson in Midori House earlier in the week. We'll be back after this.
Keep abreast of everything from breaking news to fresh business opportunities with Monocle 24's lineup of live weekday current affairs programmes. The Globalist kicks off our day at 6 a.m. UK time with 2 hours of news, media reviews, weather and reports from our correspondents around the world. At midday UK time, The Briefing helps the North American East Coast get into gear with a brisk review of news and analysis. And at 18:30 UK, Midori House gets a first read on stories hitting Asia's front pages and does a roundup with Monocle's editors. Finally, the Monocle Daily signs on for 2 hours at 2200 with a mix of our editors and special guest anchors to start the day in Asia. Keep an eye and an ear on the world, right here on Monocle 24.
Welcome back to Section D with me, Hugo MacDonald. Turin, Seoul, Helsinki, Cape Town. It's an odd bunch. What makes a design capital? We took to the road to ask a range of people in the design world which city they would choose and why.
Hi, my name is William Potts. I work at Nomes Copenhagen in Denmark. Okay, so if I should choose a capital in the world who should be the next design capital, I would probably choose Copenhagen, not only because I'm from Copenhagen, but I really think Copenhagen has something special when it comes to design. We have a huge and very old design culture in Copenhagen, which is famous and all over the world. It's known as Scandinavian design, and it really reflects the lifestyle and the way Danes they live, yeah, and how they see product design and furniture design.
I'm Drawer Benchitreet. I'm based in New York, designer, principal of Drawer Studios. In regards to a city, that was a really tough question. I actually think that, you know, I want to be a little bit kind of explain my reasoning first and how challenging it was to choose a place. I did think that London is definitely a place that now evolving in a tremendous speed in terms of design. And it's very exciting to see what comes out of London those days, the past couple of years. And I think that there's definitely, it's one of the most happening in terms of young generation, simply because of the schools here are the best.
I'm a founder of Frama, which is a Copenhagen-based company. And we launched a collection earlier this year, and it's our first year international. And we have designers from Japan, Sweden, Denmark. I would say that Beirut is an interesting capital. Also Istanbul, because both cities have some kind of energy and dynamic and thinking out of the box, and everything is by heart, I think. And it's not organized by big companies or organizations, so yeah.
I'm Alejandro Castro from Piragüí, Mexico. Brazil is quite in a boom. I think Mexico is quite interesting. I'm from Mexico, but yeah. The combination about tradition and new generations of contemporary design. It's really interesting. I would choose Mexico, Mexico City.
My name is Sebastian Rong. I am the creator of The Rong Shop. Which city would I award the as city of design? It's a tough one. Seattle, because it's an interesting city. That's nothing more than that.
My name is Alejandro Aravena. I'm a Chilean architect working at Elemental. And if I was to choose a world design capital, even if counterintuitive, I would say Medellin in Colombia, where design has proven, maybe as the highest possible level, the capacity of architecture, urban design, to transform a society for better. The capacity to coordinate through design political, social, cultural, environmental change in a place that, you know, had maybe the most difficult conditions of living. And through the introduction of good transportation, a public space, extremely carefully designed buildings, have been able to upgrade quality of life in very tough and dangerous neighborhoods. And this capacity where politicians and designers and communities come together, I guess it's more than enough as merit to make a place become design capital of the world.
For this week's Design Dispatch, we crossed the Atlantic to Sao Paulo and sat down with one of our most favourite architect designers, Izai Weinfeld, to hear about the city through his eyes.
In Sao Paulo, South America's largest city, the hustle and bustle of life never seemed to stop. Constant traffic jams, crowded sidewalks are common trademarks of the city as Sao Paulo's residents, better known as paulistanos, get where they need to go. But this is all part of the city's twisted charm.
It's a big mess, but with personality. And I think that maybe this lack of personality transforming the way the city, this became its personality.
That's Izzy Weinfeld, one of Brazil's best-known contemporary architects. A paulistano himself, he grew up in the organized chaos in this culturally diverse city. Having graduated from the School of Architecture at Mackenzie University in 1975, Izzy has been responsible for elegant, minimalist designs dotted around Sao Paulo and its rival city, Rio de Janeiro. This Havaiana store, which sells the fun-loving Brazilian flip-flops known the world over, in Sao Paulo's upscale street, Oscar Freire, is one of Izzy's prize-winning works. Characterized by its clean, open spaces and angular lines, the design of the store won Izzy the Shopping Award at the World Architecture Festival in Barcelona when the store was built in 2009. At Izzy's office, located smack dab in the middle of the vibrant neighborhood Villa Madalena, echoes of the same 1950s Brazilian architectural influence are seen here, as we look out on the city from the top floor of a minimalist building Izzy designed. He explains the root of the city's architectural design.
The city is a kind of mother of all architecture because it's a city that is generous to receive any kind of architecture. And this is nice from a city like this.
Where is the influence coming from?
Oh, I think the influences are from many, many different fields. You have here people linked with the modernism in Brazil. You have people with many references from all over the world. It's a mix of things, and you have new architects trying to find their own way in the middle of these two ways, let's say.
What does the School of Architecture look like now in Sao Paulo?
They are starting to forget the neoclassical style now, but they are doing a kind of modern or contemporary architecture that maybe it will be worse than the new classical thing, because it will be in their way how they see contemporary architecture. And this is the strongest thing in terms of architecture in the city. And then it's not so easy to find young people with new vision of what should be, asking for new ideas and to try to believe that to make a very real contemporary building could sell as well as a new classical building.
But no one can forget the work of the great Brazilian architect, Oscar Niemeyer, who at the age of 103 is still designing. His designs are present throughout Brazil, and like this one, Edifício Italia, the silver wave-like high-rise building is found in the center of São Paulo and is home to several apartments and restaurants that overlook the city's skyline. But Ize says his work is so strong it can't have a following like other Brazilian architects.
He's still very strong as an architect. This, in a way, eclipsed many generations of architects. They could not express themselves into architecture because of the strong figure of his work. I think he's wonderful, maybe more than an architect, and he's a genius. But he is the one and only one. It will not be any followers because it's very specific. He's an artist. It's impossible for someone to draw like him because he's very unique. And it's not a school of architecture in a way.
Who are big influencers over architectural design in São Paulo?
Paulo Mendes da Rocha has a lot of followers, because has an architecture that is more palatable, that people can follow his lines in a way, or his, not just his lines, but his thoughts about architecture. And we can see here in the city a lot of offices, young offices, very good ones, very good architects, but followers of his work. We have the same thing with Lina Bobardi, for me, the best Brazilian architect. And we have also many offices that were, let's say, children or pupil from Lina's work.
Indeed, Lina's work can be seen throughout the city, most notably the São Paulo Museum of Art, or better known as MASP. An elevated cube-like structure, it's one of the city's landmarks on the 2.8-kilometer stretch of the city's busy Avenida Paulista. Her work is a perfect example of different cultures blending through architectural design.
Lina, she was an Italian architect. This kind of European people who felt in love with Brazil. And she could understand very, very well the Baroque mixed with her very pure lines, and then has something of a mix between Europe and Brazil, that this is what matters really. You can see in her architecture, and this is very familiar for Brazilian people and even for European people, because it has a very subtle connection between these two cultures, but in a very clever way and very elegant and very with a very strong personality, and that touched me very deeply.
And as for where architectural design is going in São Paulo?
I have no idea, and this is the best answer about São Paulo. This is what the city is, and this is the pleasure, I think, of living here, of working here, to have no idea what will happen every day in the city. This is the good point about the city.
That was Sheena Rossiter in São Paulo with Izai Weinfeld.
Londonborg, as a Monaco Husanay.
Aus London, das ist Monaco 24.
De Londres, as a Monaco 24.
De Londres, este es Monaco 24. ロンドンからモノクロ24です。
De Londres, essa é a Monocle 24.
Londonist, essa é a Monocle 24.
Από το Λονδίνο, αυτό είναι το Monocle 24.
Λοντόστα, τέμα on Monocle 24.
Λόντζαδαν, Μπούρσε, Monocle 24.
Λόντον καρά, Monocle 24.
When Poppy Shibamoto, Monocle's photo director, stepped up to the mic last week to talk us through a chair as she saw it, she instantly gained a cult following for her poetic description. So much so that I challenged her this week to talk us through something a little more complex, and here's what she had to say.
Another pottery series from another country consists of a terracotta pitcher, cup and a plate in white, and two sizes of bowls in black and in white. So here's a pitcher. The minimalist look of this pitcher emphasizes the utility of its design. It is wide at the bottom to give it stability. The stretched rectangular handle is like a metalwork, giving it a solid shape. It's thin for terracotta ware, but it has the solidness of stoneware. The colour is rustic copper, which resembles a sweet potato skin. The outside is matte textured. It won't slip out of your hand when it's full of water. Don't imagine a chalky feel, it is more like powdery, delicate skin. The feel of eucalyptus leaves. Think of warm wool instead of cool silk. It's very natural to touch. Contrastingly, inside the jug is glazed, so it's shinier and darker. This makes it easier to clean, I think. Imagine a yellow flower or fallen autumn leaves in a pitcher against a wall in a British racing green. If you want to play safe, a light grey wall will do. Pottery series by another country, designed by Ian McIntyre, is beautifully photographed in a medium format film for Monocle issue 48, page 167.
That was Poppy Shibamoto, Monocle's photo director, talking us through another country's new ceramic tableware range. Paola Antonelli, head curator of design at MoMA in New York, recently said that font design might just be the most advanced form of design existing today. It's a big statement, but interest in and appreciation of typography is certainly gaining ground outside the industry. Doing our bit to demystify the world of fonts, each week on Section D we're going to dissect a different font in a regular segment, which I'm calling Talking Types. So I'm joined in the studio now by Monocle's creative director, Richard Spencer-Powell. Welcome, Rich.
Hi.
You've brought along a type that you want to talk about.
I have, yes.
What is it?
It's called City Street Type. It's a little boring a name for what it actually is, and it's not as urban as it sounds, that City Street Type. It's a typeface from the signage used in Berlin, both East and West Berlin.
Right.
If anyone's been to Berlin, they see the street signs, particularly in the east, you'll recognise this. They are sadly diminishing as things get updated. But this particular font, I think, is just beautiful.
No, I recognise it, actually. It's amazing seeing a font like that. I would never have pinpointed it to Berlin, but now that you tell me about it, I can...
Yeah, it's, you know, I think typeface can be all sorts of things, but when they're evocative like that, I think they're really, it's, you know, really something, and not... There are obviously there's lots of fonts that can be evocative, but I think it's just really nice. It's really kind of, not to be gushy, but it kind of transports you back to Berlin. And Berlin is a city, I think, that does type amazingly because there's so much history there, and it's the defeated, the broken city that didn't get repaired. So much of it is just left intact. So you end up having all these amazing sort of 30s to 50s typefaces. And this font was designed... after the war, so it's an East German font.
And the font is called Charlottenburg.
That's just an example of it in use. It's actually called, I don't think it has a name, but the recut has a name. So it's been digitized, which means technically that someone has taken the physical forms and programmed it into a computer, made it vector scalable font that we can all use in our computers. The original typeface, I don't even think it has a name. It was just designed by, it came out of... the former GDR government, when they reformatted their signs in the 50s, and it's, as far as I'm aware, that came out of a type foundry called Typo Art from Dresden. The actual typeface itself, obviously, it was never made into a metal form. It's actually just machine made. So in a way, it's like a, which is what I quite like about it, is that it's an engraver's font technically. So it just has a very sort of natural feel to it. It isn't too spiky or too overworked. It's just nice and warm and friendly is a word I'd use to describe it.
And I mean, it's interesting the way that it came into being then. Is it possible to have fonts that come into existence in a similar sort of way today, or does everything start very overworked and digital?
These days, obviously, everything is a bit overworked and digital, but there has been recently a bit of a move to recut things that are found. Because I think we've probably exhausted the pool of ideas, and I think what has happened since, sort of proliferation of Apple Mac and the fact that so many fonts got designed in the 90s and everyone wanted a new typeface and it just kind of became slightly big business. But now I think people are starting to have original ideas about typography, not making fonts for the sake of it, but actually thinking about what would be a nice typeface to make. And so I think we're seeing a bit more craft go back into the art, which is really nice to see.
Is that a picture that says Curry Strass? No. No, I was thinking Curry Verst.
Curvy Strasser.
Okay.
Equally unusual.
I do love currywurst.
Yeah, me too. They need to get a good one in London, actually.
I know. Well, we were talking the other day about the lack of good sausage carts on the streets in London.
Yeah. Something like the €1 price point, I think, is always good.
Yes, definitely. And going back to this typeface in Berlin, it's interesting that you mentioned this earlier, that a typeface can be so evocative of a place. I mean,
yeah,
we live in London and you think London Underground.
Yes, London Underground is that's a great typeface. And again, that's very...
Edward Johnson.
It's very evocative of London. And I think this is the same thing. It does exactly the same. It has the same sort of traits. You see it, you recognise it.
That was Monocle's creative director, Richard Spencer Powell, talking Berlin street signs and bratwurst. We'll be back after this.
Keep abreast of everything from breaking news to fresh business opportunities with Monocle 24's lineup of live weekday current affairs programmes. The Globalist kicks off our day at 6 a.m. UK time with 2 hours of news, media reviews, weather and reports from our correspondents around the world. At midday UK time, The Briefing helps the North American East Coast get into gear with a brisk review of news and analysis. And at 18:30 UK time, Midori House gets a first read on stories hitting Asia's front pages and does a roundup with Monocle's editors. Finally, the Monocle Daily signs on for 2 hours at 2200 with a mix of our editors and special guest anchors to start the day in Asia. Keep an eye and an ear on the world, right here on Monocle 24.
Welcome back to Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. Staying in Berlin, but moving on from the sausage stands, we headed to Tempelhof Airport, dropping in on a new design fair, Kubik. Not another ruddy design fair, you might think, as I confess did I, but Kubik is a little different, as Mar Sellers found out.
Does the world need another chair? Well, the organisers of Kubik billed as the next generation trade show for furniture and design sure think so. Kubik is a design fair which mixes furniture, design, organic local food, music and flair in one of Berlin's biggest and historical landmarks, the now defunct Tempelhof Airport, with 130 different design brands from 20 different countries.
My name is Matthias Schmidt. I'm the managing director from the Offshore AG, and Offshore is the producing company of Kubik, the new furniture fair in Berlin. So we think that the furniture fair market is a very, very old school and old fashioned market, and we see that a lot of new and fresh, but also a lot of the classical furniture design companies in our opinion, need a new marketplace at a new and amazing city. And we think that, of course, Milano is the biggest one in the world and it's untouchable. But other fairs, like especially like Cologne, we think it's too old school, and we think that there's a good possibility for the market to go and think in other ways.
People who come here are architects, specifiers, interior designers, other designers, manufacturers. Everyone related in the industry comes to these sort of events. And to just describe the context, we're inside one of the hangars, which is a gigantic space which has been built to accommodate aircraft. It has a certain kind of metropolis feel. And there's this constant sort of murmur that you hear, noise, because of the gigantic volume of space.
So my name is William Potts. I work at Nomes Copenhagen, which is a Copenhagen-based company, a design company. We started out making the brand because we want to organize the mess that we have in our daily lives. That's why we are called No Mess. Well, the reason why we have decided to come to Quebec is to support the new fair. We like the idea that the fair was only about design, because when you go to fairs all over Europe, you see not only design but also kitchenware, Christmas themes and everything, so it gets kind of confused. Here we have, the Quebec has tried to concentrate only on good design.
My name is Sebastian Rong. I am the creator of The Rong Shop. The Rong Shop is a new business that I launched here in Quebec. It was launched last night with an auction. We auctioned four pieces, were made by four different designers, and proceeds of the auction went to charity. And the concept behind The Rong Shop is it's a creative platform for batch production to direct sales, so it's not involved at all on the retail level. And for me to actually do an event in Berlin is relevant, because I think Berlin is a very interesting up and coming creative city, and is at the forefront of European design.
And what do the designers like about Quebec?
The ambience here, it's like very edgy. I like the people here.
The relaxed atmosphere.
It's not so big, but it's the space is great.
It's just it's more accessible, and it's quite relaxed, which is good.
I like the other brands quite very much. The sound is good, and I think that's very important. When I talk to you or talk to my clients, we can understand each other. That's important for me.
And the response to the organizers has been?
Some people say, it's very cool. It's the most important thing for us is to see new brands, to see new companies, to see what is possible in a location like this. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing building, and so I think the responses, most of the responses, very, very positive, and a lot of people see what we want to do for the future, and that's for us the most important thing, to see the future, not only the day, today, or yesterday, or tomorrow.
And what does the future hold for Quebec?
So we have to grow, definitely. Our vision is to grow until 2015 or maybe 2016. Over the whole airport buildings, and that is our goal, to get this in maybe 2015 or 16. But we want to grow, definitely. We have to grow. It's important.
From Monocle in Berlin, I'm Mar Sellers.
You're back with Section D on Monocle 24. Time for a quick spin around the world of design retail. You might think it's all doom and gloom in this climate for design retailers, when consumers are shunning unnecessary expenditures, a new sofa isn't really top of anyone's shopping list. But that's not necessarily the case. From London to Paris to New York, we asked buyers in design stores what's selling and why. We started round the corner from Midori House at Scandium on Marylebone High Street, where we spoke to head buyer Anna Tietze.
Italy is quite a big seller for us, and it ranges from the vases to the drinking glasses as well. You have the Kiwi candle holders, And you can see the common variety of colours. So that's always something to choose from, which I think makes it one of our biggest sellers in terms of volume. So here we are in front of one of our best sellers at the moment. It's a George Jensen carafe. It's made in glass with a wooden stopper. And it's very unusual for George Jensen to make something in glass and wood. But I think they are following the trend of designing something a bit warmer, sort of away from the stainless steel and the cold materials. And it's been such a great success for us, really. Little Mai is the bestseller of the Italo Mux. I think a lot of girls identify with her, including me. She's a little bit naughty, a little bit grumpy, but really good at heart. And I think everybody likes a little bit of a character. So she's just lovely, and it's a lovely design as well.
My name is Carlos Junqueira, and the store is Espaço. We represent Brazilian designers from the 30s until the today, the contemporary ones. Some pieces are vintage, some pieces are re-edition, some are new pieces. It's very difficult for me to say what sells better, you know. We have basically a group of pieces that can serve completely different tastes. Actually, we are selling Sergio Rodriguez. We sell basically the vintage when I have and the re-editions. We sell Carlos Mota in Los Angeles. He's very desirable over there. We sell a lot of Claudia Moreira Salles and Etel Carmona, which is a totally different approach from Carlos Mota and from Sergio Rodriguez. We sell Isai Weinfeld and Artur Casas, who has another different approach. The most popular is Sergio Rodriguez, okay, because he's designing since the 40s, you know, and he's still designing and he's still on top of everything that's going on. And he becomes an icon of Brazilian design. It's Sergio Rodriguez, no question about it.
My name is Fanta, and we are in boutique Victoire Homme. Most of the brands are Italian designers. We are selling a brand like PT01, Monte d'Oro, or again some shirt like Aglini, who are some product really well designed that the customer are looking for in Paris, because of course there is no that kind of designer in Paris. For example, there is a scarf from Palier Rossarti with cashmere and modal. So this is a particular fabric, so it's quite smooth for the body. And also beautiful but simple. And maybe I can show you also PT01, which is a brand, how can I say, for the trousers. Let's say now most of the men are looking for like slim cut trousers, and of course PT01 is the best for that. But really, really, we are selling a lot of shirts Aglini. That's the most things that people want.
You've been listening to Section D on Monocle 24 with me, Hugo MacDonald. And that's all we've got time for this week. Tune in next week for a Japan special as we rip up the streets of Tokyo during the annual Tokyo Design Week. But for now, thank you for listening.